Hey folks, Duke Machado here, Latinos for Trump Radio. We're glad you're tuning in tonight. We've got an awesome program for you. Tonight we're visiting with the founder, the president of Latinos for Trump, Marco Gutierrez. And he's going to come on, he's going to tell us his story, kind of how this thing all came about. Latinos for Trump is such a great movement taking place right now across the country. And Marco is at the head of it. And you know, we're going to get some good inside scoop from his perspective on what's going on politically, what some of the issues are going on right now among Latinos. And you know, we're going to find out why he supports Trump, what this is all about, what's the motivation behind Latinos for Trump. So won't you help me and welcome good friend Marco Gutierrez. How you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, great to be here.
Well, you know, I have been with Latinos for Trump for a few months now, and I know what I've witnessed in just this short time, 3 or 4 months, or however long I've been involved with the organization, but you've been involved for years. Tell the listeners, you know, tell everyone, this is Latinos for Trump Radio. How did all this come to be?
This all happened, you know. Something unique, my perspective here is that I was born and raised in Mexico. So I came here chasing the American dream in the beginning of the 90s, 1991. So the world, the view of me of the United States of America was like, don't go, you know, the war with Iraq was about to start January of that year, I think. So they're like, you know, the United States about to go down, you know, they're gonna be in war, they're gonna kill you basically. But still, you know, my parents have been working here for a couple of years, so on and off, they kind of already made their mind. So I come here, I didn't know a word of English. I go to high school here, and I meet my wife, Jennifer, in high school. We have 6 kids now. But so for me, the United States of America, I remember the first time I went out with Jennifer, and I saw the middle-class neighborhood of California, in Enya, California. It was beautiful. You know, everybody was working. Their houses looked nice, you know, nice yard. And then I remember that Jennifer's mom ordered pizza for me. I didn't speak English very well, but I will say, tell her thank you. She was very kind. And they used to play La Bamba, the music La Bamba, the movie La Bamba. Have you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Richie Valens. Yes.
Yeah. So I think they were trying to, they were playing it for me, but I didn't see any Mexican in the La Bamba.
They were trying to make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, but it was more American to me, La Bamba, than anything. So I learned the United States of America in a beautiful way, to be honest with you. I had my first pizza. I had my first root beer float with Jennifer. So then I go on, and my first job was at the flea market. Then I go on and sell cars. I think you sell cars.
Yeah, I'm a car guy.
So that wasn't my university, really. You know, I understand what a car. In fact, I should have never left that job. But then I got into the real estate. I went to school and I started doing mortgages. So I quickly, I kind of climbed the ladder of success here and achieved the American dream. And I remember that a lot of people used to tell me, Marco, you're living the American dream, huh? And I was always trying to see, what is the American dream? Well, I was making a lot of money in the mortgage boom here in California. You know, I live close to San Jose, so houses here are like over $1 million. But what I didn't see is that there was this economic crisis was developing. And I think a lot of people didn't see it. And so when the mortgage collapses in 2008, 2009, I go bankrupt. Mm. And I think that's when I learned what the American dream was, because I learned that the American dream of some people is to take your American dream. And that was Obama. I think that's not Obama's American dream. He had an American dream, but he was to take America's dream.
Yeah. Well, you know, this country founded on, you know, free enterprise and capitalism, those aren't bad words. And, you know, that's the engine of our country. It's what makes us tick. We're going to get back into this. Folks, we're visiting with Marco Gutierrez, president of Latinos for Trump. And you're listening here. I'm Duke Machado, Latino for Trump Radio. We'll be right back after this message. All right, folks, we're back here. Thanks for hanging in there. And like I said before the break, you know, this country, the ability that we have, and to me, Marco, when you say the American dream, to me, all the American dream is a level playing field. It's the environment that will allow me to chase whatever it is that I want. If I want to live middle income, middle class life, I can do that. If I want to become ultra rich, I can do that too. This country allows us to do that if we want to do it. And see, that's the problem that I see, is that more and more people are defeated mentally. They don't want to try. They don't, like you hear, people don't even want to know the truth. When you tell them the truth, they don't believe the truth. It's crazy times that we're living in America. And, you know, like you, like others, we're all busy working and providing for our families. And then all of a sudden something happens and we realize we got to do something. We can't just sit and watch anymore. What was that moment for you? Was that the economic collapse or the housing bubble bust, or what was that?
I think that moment for me was in 2009. I start helping a lot of people in hardship, and if you go mm-hmm. back, Obama used that word so much, hardship, and he did all the stimulus. So all the clients that I had helped buy a house, helped them develop financially, they were losing everything. So I lived close to Stockton, which was the capital of foreclosure. So I from getting to see families at the happiest moment when they buy a house, I mean, even the dog's happy because he's getting a bigger backyard.
Yeah.
So to see people losing everything, so people are losing lifetime savings, they're losing their home, they're losing their jobs, businesses, and I start helping a lot of these people, and at the same time I'm experiencing what they're experiencing. So I learned so much about the way the Obama administration attacked this. I saw that they were not really, they didn't want to fix the problem. They just wanted to postpone the inevitable. If you remember, there was $900 billion given to the bankers.
Mm-hmm.
So the bankers were supposed to help the consumer. There was a lot of people here in California that bought second houses. It should have not have so many houses. There was people who had 20 houses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were not experienced investors. But I think that the primary house where people live should have never been taken away from them. But a lot of these foreclosures were happening, and I see that the investor that was buying all these houses back was Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. So I'm like, there is something wrong here. How can the government pretend that they're helping when they are the ones that are buying all these foreclosures? And then later I find out that they were using that money to feed the healthcare act. But it wasn't until later. So when Donald Trump comes and he starts saying that he's going to bring jobs back and he's going to build a wall, and I'm like, yeah, let's do something. I mean, for this is 2015, for the last 5 years, I've been just trying to figure out how to make sense of all this. I mean, from one day making $500,000 a month to the next day not having electricity on your $2 million house and cooking with a little camping stove. It just doesn't make sense. It's just, but that's how fast this thing hit everybody. So I sat very close. I mean, there was friends that killed themselves. There was friends that a lot of people divorced. A lot of people went back to Mexico. I don't know if you remember, there was that was like the caravan, but in Mexico. Mexicans were going back because there was no jobs here.
Yeah, so I mean, so everything was looking pretty bleak. The people's losing homes and businesses and jobs, and you're seeing the struggle, and then Trump comes along and says, "We need jobs."
Not just yet. So I go into rehab myself because I started drinking a lot because, you know, as a Mexican, I like tequila. So there was nothing else to do. So I go to rehab and I learn a lot of stuff about myself. I become aware of many things, cultural, traditionally, things that within our culture that affect us. Okay? So then I remember writing an article and I was trying to publish it because I had this spiritual awakening right around 2012, 2013, where I said that we were not losing our houses, we were not losing our jobs, we were not losing our wives, but we were losing hope and we were losing faith, hope, in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Then later, I learned a lot about the legal process because I became a legal expert helping all these clients of mine. And I found out through this, that's why I meant libertarians. That's when I got a little bit close to politics, I guess you can say. Because the libertarians, they know how to defend themselves in court and all that. But when I see that Donald Trump comes back, what I was gonna tell you is that our dollar is not based on gold and silver anymore like it used to be. Our dollar really is backed by the spirit of Americans, the spirit of our nation. So when Obama demoralized the spirit of America, he was actually really hitting us in the heart of what it is to be an American in the American dream.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't good to believe in American exceptionalism anymore, or, you know, we couldn't build anything on our own unless the government helped us do it, right?
Remember, he actually did say that.
Yeah.
He didn't build that.
Yeah, I know.
So I see. I mean, I really tried to like Obama. Honestly, I liked. He was very eloquent. Well, that's one thing I actually admire, or value, or I guess not admire, but like about socialist people. They're all very good speakers. You know, they are very.
They have to be persuasive to feed the garbage the way they do.
But I used to use his quotes about that we, you know, we would need to sacrifice and blah, blah, blah. But he was just trying to tell us to be okay, that he was going to take away everything from us and we should be okay with it.
Yeah.
Basically, that was his message. So when Donald Trump, when I hear one of the first speeches of Donald Trump, and this guy is pissed, I mean, he's like, enough. And I was like, yeah. This is the guy I want to follow. And I did a couple of videos. The first one I did was against George Lopez, because George Lopez was he was really being very mean to Trump, and I felt that he was being a little hypocrite, because here is a guy that made his career, his fortune, talking bad about Mexicans, and Trump said one thing that he didn't like, and then he's all, you know, offensive. But I felt that he didn't know that the Hispanic communities have been financially raped by the banks. Somebody needed to do something about that. You know, somebody needed to give that faith back, that enthusiasm, that energy, that faith back to our households.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to pay more attention to Trump, to see the way he expressed himself, and now I'm not gonna give Trump he's not like a god or anything. I mean, he's a salesman. You're a salesman too. So of course he's not a perfect man, but I see that he's trying. And I see how hard he's trying to get this country out of the dark age mm-hmm. of Obama.
Yeah, and it was quite a dark age too. I my spirits were down. We're talking about Obama did a great job of getting everyone's spirits down. I'll tell you that much. Hey folks, we're going to take another quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're listening. You're visiting with Marco Gutierrez, President Latinos for Trump, and I'm Duke Machado. We'll be right back after this message. All right, folks, we're back. Marco, why don't you go ahead and finish telling us that what it was that made you join President Trump and his movement?
Well, for one, that feudal existence I was, because really there was no way out of this economic crisis I was in. It doesn't matter how hard I tried trying to help my clients and myself get out of this mess. But the way I felt is that I was fighting these giants, this corporate America. And I kind of feel like the soldiers that come back from war, you know, and I know you were in service too, that I felt that I was a soldier of the banks. I did help the banks for a long time to develop this business and but they no longer needed me. So they instituted a bunch of laws where I couldn't even get close to people that were in financial distress, or it would be illegal. So then I learned about all these regulations that Obama had instituted. And I have some problems with my licensing. And I just felt that it wasn't fair. You know, all this Patriot Act and this, there's another regulation, the... I'll remember later. I'll tell you this. Yeah. But there's a banking regulation that doesn't let banks lend mm-hmm. money right now. So we need to deal with that, because there's no funding out there. And now a lot of mortgage associations out there are bringing this, saying that if we don't institute banking opportunities, financial opportunities for Hispanics, which is for minorities, we're going to have problems again, because now you have all these investors that are accumulating all this wealth again, that are buying all these homes, and you don't have the regular, normal buyer that needs a house to live in, especially here in the Bay Area. You know, you have teachers, you have police officers, you have all these people that can have to drive 3 hours, almost 2 hours to the place they work at because they cannot afford their house. So that's where I'm at. I feel that as a newcomer into this country, I have the opportunity to experience the American dream at every stage. And now I get to go back and sort of like use what I have learned. And that's when Latinos for Trump is born, because Latinos for Trump was created when the mainstream media, the left, was trying to say that Trump did not have the support of minorities. So that's when all the gays for Trump, blacks for Trump, immigrant. In fact, the first name we started using was Immigrants for Trump. That was the name of our website. And then here came the mainstream. I was blessed, really. I was blessed because the mainstream media saw, look at this guy. He has a very strong accent. And he's supporting this racist man. So I go to MSNBC, and then that's when they cornered me. And that's when I said the taco trucks on every corner phrase that was coined as a political symbol. And if you go and see taco trucks on every corner, there's a Wikipedia page with all the madness that I went through, because the mainstream media, they're powerful. They have, look, if I hadn't been spiritually and morally the way I was, because of all my experience, I mean, I would have probably killed myself, because these people, they were outside my house for a couple of days. There was news vans outside my house. They called my hometown. They put me on a microscope. They put all my, a lot of people get angry. A lot of activists get mad because they get doxxed and somebody puts their address online. Shoot, they didn't just put my address online. They put everything everywhere out there. So, and the lady, what's her name? Joy Reid. I saw her at the second debate, and she came to me and she said, you know, I'm sorry that we probably destroyed your life. And I told her, no, you know, you came late to the party. That was Obama.
Yeah. Yeah. She didn't trust like that. Me. Yeah.
You guys had, Obama had already done it. Like, you know, just, and from there, it was just so amazing, because I got to travel everywhere with my flag, defending this man that I saw on the campaign trail give his heart and his soul. I mean, this guy doing 3 rallies a day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when I go to Texas to visit you guys, one rally, I'm so tired.
Yeah. And he's everywhere. He does have lots of energy. He said that early on too.
He's 72.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome.
He's like Don Quixote, you know, he's like this. Este caballero que no se cansa.
Yeah.
Keeps going.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, folks. Go ahead, Marco.
And the rest is really up how you saw me, because this is how things happen on this end for me. And now my hope is that there is a lot of Hispanics out there that saw what I went through and that joined the party, because I'll tell you, Duke, one of the hardest things for me out there has been to be accepted, not by Americans, but by the Hispanics that have already established themselves here. So I think that if Chicanos, Pochos, or whatever they call themselves, if they start accepting the newcomers, the ones that came in the 80s, and we all join the same, we all harmonize in the same message, I think we're going to be able to take responsibility for the problems that the Hispanic community has and fix them ourselves, and not expect that what we call the Americans fix them for us, you know?
Yeah, I've always said that, you know, we can't blame anyone but ourselves for the problems that we face in our communities. Because we're absent. We don't vote. We don't show up to vote. We don't show up at City Hall. We don't, you know, go to our commissioner's court meetings. We don't do none of that stuff. And, you know, we just expect everyone else to handle it for us. And those days are over. Those days have got to be history, because otherwise, I mean, who will do something? If we're not going to do it, who else will do it? All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're listening to Duke Machado here on Latinos for Trump Radio, and our guest tonight is Marco Gutierrez, president of Latinos for Trump. We'll be right back. back here. Duke Machado, Latinos for Trump Radio. So we've been visiting with Marco for the past 20, 30 minutes here. And, you know, it's good, Marco, to hear, because even some of the things you said tonight, I've never heard. And it's always good to get to know the people behind the movements, you know, and so... You know, there's a lot more people now involved in this organization than when you got it started. And the thing that I've noticed is since I've become a member of the team here is how spiritually connected we all are. And how we don't seek glory for ourselves. And how we all know that an awakening must happen, and that we all believe Latinos can be the difference in whether America is a success or America slips into socialism. You know, Latinos can decide what happens there. What is it going to take? What is that message that has to be, that has to break through, or that we can use to break through these years and years of Democrat and liberal media brainwashing?
Well, you know, something I can tell you, Duke, and when you go to a rehabilitation center or, you know, drugs, alcohol, or any problem, any obsession. People, it is necessary for people to have hit a bottom. I really feel that I hit a bottom on the excesses of, you know, personal, pasiones desenfrenadas. Uncontrollable passions.
Passions, yeah.
Deseos insaciables, insatiable desires. You know, that has to, you know, has to end. Because really, when you give your life and your will to a higher power, as you understand it, to God, and you start playing by the rules, you're right, there is a spiritual awakening. And I do believe that Hispanics are very close to that spiritual awakening. And even the opposition, I have always been very respectful to the opposition and the ones that were very mean to me. I would tell them, look, I hope that even in an indirect way, Donald Trump has really hit you. I don't care if you're on the left, because soon you will find out that Hispanics really belong on the right. You know, they're the concern, but at least that you come out of the play. So I think that by me finding, and you're right, yes, we're very spiritually connected. And a lot of that has to do with how I set the cultural and the mission. And the mission is to be of service. We are a support group. We're not here to gain political power. We're here to be of service. And the culture that we have developed, it is a fraternity, because really what I used to tell a lot of my clients that came to me that were defrauded by a lot of attorneys out there, the problems that I saw is that most of these immigrants come here, they don't have an uncle, they don't have a relative that they can go to when they have these problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we do. We went through this financial crisis. Now, if somebody comes to me, I'm going to help them however I can. And I think politically the same way. I don't think we have a lot of people in the political arena that we can go to. There's no effective leadership. But I think there is a saying out there that when there's no more leaders in the village, you become one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time for all of us out there that are listening right now to put on their long pants. And it is time for the Hispanic collective consciousness to become of age. It is time for us to establish our identity in this political arena, because we don't have a sustainable identity here. I mean, Cesar Chavez did excellent. I think he did awesome. There's a lot of people, Cesar Chavez sympathizers, that I got to fight here, and because I'm very close to where there was an attorney that I had a long, like a 3-year lawsuit against, that did work with the committees of Cesar Chavez. So the problem that I saw with that is that for some reason he didn't leave a successor that would create that would keep that message going. And now you have the left has kidnapped Cesar Chavez, and they have sort of like changed the narrative to fit their, you know, change things to fit their narrative. But I think that Cesar Chavez had a really good idea of what our labor force needs, our communities need. And he was able to inject that enthusiasm and to help other Hispanics feel pride in what they do, no matter what it is, no matter if they're, you know, they're cooks, they're farm workers, to feel good of what they do and to be part of this nation and to give back to this nation. So I think though, if we get together and if we find a successor of those ideals, we're gonna be able to bring change in our communities and to be able to establish the what I call the true and correct identity of Hispanics, because Hispanics don't hate white people, you know, and I'm just tired of that. I know there was problems with the Chicanos, and there was I understand that, but you know, every revolution has its problems. But we're not in the 60s anymore. This is a new time, and we need to work together, or we're going to have taco trucks on every corner.
Yeah, you're doubling down on the taco trucks in every corner. And, you know, and in the South, and like in Texas and, you know, New Mexico, California, we already see taco trucks everywhere. But in the rest of the country, they don't quite see all those. Not as often, but they're coming. You're right. You know, I wanted to say something about... Sure. President Trump here. You know, we're going along and we're doing this, right? We're doing Latinos for Trump, and we're doing what we feel we need to do in the best way that we can do it. And, you know, I go around and me personally, I'm meeting with county chairman, I'm meeting with people, and I'm making calls to volunteers. You know, they submit their information online, and I call them. You know, it's like I'm in sales, like you said, I'm in sales, and I call them, and sometimes they answer, and sometimes I just leave a message and they call me back. I mean, today I had a call from a guy in El Paso. He says, "I'm not involved in the party. I don't normally vote." He says, "But I did vote for Trump. And I don't know of anything that is going on in my area politically." And he said that he was going to think about going to the event in El Paso. And I told him, I said, "Don't think about it. Do it. Be there. Be that face. Be that voice. take advantage of that opportunity to show your support, because just like he said, you can't, it's going to be hard to find conservative Latino Trump supporters in El Paso. That's what they say. We're going to find out. But, you know, even him is hesitant to show up and expose themselves as being Trump supporters. I find that interesting.
Well, you know, you're going to find that has been my fight. And if you go back to when I said taco trucks on every corner, I was trying to illustrate that there was a lot of Hispanics in the closet, that Trump supporters in the closet in the Hispanic community, because of the violent criticism of the left. And not only because of that, but, you know, in our Hispanic community, we have this self-defense mechanism as a culture, where if anybody tries to, you know, to get their head a little bit above the rest, mm-hmm. we hit them right.
We knock them down. Yep.
We knock them down. So a lot of that has to do with that people don't want to come out and say it, but they're saying it with their actions. You know, they're already business owners. They're something that I sell a lot about the Hispanic community. If you go back to Aztec times, el trueque, I mean, the trade among Hispanics is equivalent to the Wall Street, you know, markets. Mm. You have the people provide a service. They sell, mm-hmm. sell and buy anything.
Mm-hmm. Pulgas, what you name it.
The flea market, mm-hmm. and I did say that if we did not include the Hispanic community in our economic system, they're still going to survive, and you're going to have a flea market commerce, because that's what we do in Mexico. That's what most third world countries do. If you get them out of the market, they'll continue doing their stuff, you know, under the table. And good luck taxing that economic system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, now we're getting into immigration. I don't know if we want to get into that so deep tonight. That's a whole separate show. But I will say this. When it comes to immigration, every time I get a chance, I say that I support and I love immigration. I love legal immigrants who come here. And, you know, what is wrong with wanting people to come here legally? There's nothing wrong with that. We're not bigots because we want a process to check people in and check them out. You know, the way the liberals spin everything, you know, we hate Mexicans, Trump, you know, that's what got me to support Trump, actually, because I was a Rubio supporter. I like Marco Rubio until I saw Trump speak, and when he said something about Mexico is sending rapists and murderers, et cetera, however the media spun that. That's not what I heard. He didn't say that. But when I saw how the media spun it, that was evidence for me that was wrong, that he was misrepresented, that they were lying. And if they're going to lie so blatantly and run with it, that's really the first time that I consciously picked it up. And I said, wow, they hate this guy. They're trying to sabotage him. And then I started listening more and more. And then, of course, I became a Trump supporter. But, you know, we've got a lot. We've got this 2020 coming up. The Democrats are trying to figure out who they're going to run. And I don't know, are Republicans going to try to run against President Trump? I hope not. I hope not.
You know, just like you said, let's do an immigration another time, but I kind of want to see what you have seen of me, because that's going to help me how I'm going to share what I have, my experience, strength and hope here in all this 3 years with you guys too. But if you see that there, that's the last thing they could have done to me, because I have been in a 12-step program where 12-step program, you can think it of as a secular Bible boot camp on steroids. Like you have to take responsibility for your own actions. Mm-hmm. When Trump said all that, he touched on a spiritual and cultural problem that we have as Hispanics, and I used to piss a lot of people on the radio because I would say that they have the syndrome of the ¿cómo se dice? El síndrome de la mujer golpeada.
Uh-huh.
You know,
like a battered wife or something.
Syndrome, yeah. Mm-hmm. That always defends the husband, even though she's getting beat up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Hispanics. They defend their criminals.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
You know, and we all know somebody or have a friend or a family member that is guilty of the things that Trump said. Or we know somebody in the neighborhood. So that hits us. He hit us really close to home. And people, instead of taking responsibility, they saw actually Trump was trying to help us. And really, it was Jorge Ramos,
yeah,
and other Spanish news outlets that in 2002, they came with some data where most of the women that were being cross over the water were being raped. So it was actually their information. But because Trump was saying it, he wasn't good for them. But Trump was, and then even on Hannity, they were cornering Trump and to say something like, no, Mexicans are not rapists. And Trump, because he's so smart, man, he's like, well, who's doing the raping?
Who's doing it?
Because the raping is a fact. If the Mexicans are not doing the raping, then who's doing the raping? And then they didn't know what to respond to that.
Yeah.
So if Hispanics really want to take responsibility, we can't blame Trump for what happens at the border, right?
No. I mean, those are decisions that people made months ago. You know, they made their own decision to come, and they get here and there's a wall, and what do they expect? That we're just gonna let them in? I mean, I know that that's happening. The asylum laws are being worked against us. You know, there's a lot of problems, and President Trump's new immigration plan, the merit-based system. That's going to be interesting. That's going to change the dynamics of our immigration process for sure. We have to get into that another time. That's a deep discussion.
Yeah. In fact, let me just say a little bit of that. If you go to my Wikipedia, it says there that when I went to the convention, I did say that the wall was also symbolic and because I see that there is an emotional separation, a disconnection from reality here of a lot of immigrants. So you have a lot of new immigrants that are here physically, but emotionally they're still in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell them you're going to put a wall. Psychologically, you're messing them up, because now they have to
choose.
They have to say which side of
the
fence they're on.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to start investing their energy in the land they stand on, where they get fed every day, instead of thinking and taking all outsourcing a lifetime of earnings to a country that has failed them in the first place.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, everyone's coming here, and the problems continue where they're leaving. So the problems are not being solved. That's for sure. Anyway, Mark, I'm going to give you the final word to let you wrap up a final statement if you have one, and we'll end this program here shortly.
Well, Duke, what can I tell you? I am really grateful to be part of this group, because I am not Latinos for Trump. It's we. It's what happens every day, what we do every day. You know, I like to get to know you more, and the best thing is to have this kind of conversations and to hope that there is people listening out there that are going to also one day call you and say, hey, I wanna say what I like about Marco, what I don't like about Marco, because that's how the truth manifests itself, by having these discussions. And what stays at the end, what stays at the top is the truth itself. And that's God that's talking through us. And because who knows, maybe you and I, we're wrong. Maybe we're wrong for following Trump. But unless we have a valid objective counterattack, what we're saying, the truth is going to become what we have said here tonight, because that's what I used to say to all the thousands of freaking reporters that came to me to convince me that there was no Hispanic support for Trump. And at the end, when I was against the wall, I would just say, "Truth and reason would prevail," and that's in the Bible, that's in the Constitution. And then they would say, well, are you saying that Hillary Clinton is going to win? And I would say, well, if she holds truth and reason, she's going to win. But I think that Donald Trump holds the truth and reason, and he also holds the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that became so. That came to pass, and I was correct. So hopefully that's the case for 2020, and I think that what has been born here between you and me and the people that are working with us, it's amazing. And because I pride myself that I am a newcomer, and then there's little I can tell you guys that you guys don't know, you know, and I am grateful that you guys are listening to me. But I bring you a message. I was born and raised in Mexico, and trust me, you don't want your kids to grow under those conditions.
Marco, I thank you for your time tonight and for sharing your story with us. You know, I do feel blessed. I feel our movement is blessed. And like I said in the last program, as long as we have humble hearts and that we're not seeking personal glory or gain, and we give glory to the Lord, that he will help us flourish, and we will be able to do what we need to do. And all the volunteers that are signing up, I'm telling you, I look at my list, and every day it's growing and growing, and my email list and the phone numbers and all the different cities that they're from. And this is just my territory in North Texas. You know... We're laying the foundation, and we're serious about what we're doing. And I think everyone in our group is serious about what we're doing. And I thank you again, Marco, and we'll get this posted tonight. To all of you out listening, I appreciate you tuning in. Duke Machado here with Marco Gutierrez, president of Latinos for Trump. This is Latinos for Trump Radio. We're out of here.
Good night.